Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you might be listening. My name is Frank Duncan, and you're listening to Backfield Banter, a podcast about baseball. We're here at the Premier Baseball Facility in Kansas City. And once again, I'm Frank Duncan. I'm here with Bob Zimmerman and Zach McLeod and the man in the chair, Will Stevens. Today, we've got a really great show. We've got an opportunity to talk to Mr. Joe Murphy, a scout and someone who's been in the game for a really long time. So I'm going to let Zach take it away and introduce him.
Yeah, so me and Joe met, I think it was 2018 or 19. I was a volunteer amateur scout with the Rays, kind of doing an internship, trying to break into professional baseball, just, you know, higher level baseball instead of coaching in high school. And Joe and Matt Allison, who's the area scout at the time and still currently is for the Rays, were kind enough to kind of like take me under their wing and go to games and then kind of give me assignments with different players to watch and write reports on. But Joe, you know, I got, you were born in Moline, Illinois, went to Allaman Catholic High School and played baseball there.
Yes.
You enlisted in the Army and served in Vietnam and then
played. Thank you for your service, yep. Joe. Thank you, Joe. A round of applause there.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Played collegiate baseball at Blackhawk Junior College in Illinois. After that, took a job for the Phillies and kind of was deciding between taking the head coaching job at a college, but decided to go with that. And we can kind of talk about that later. But overall, been in scouting roles for the Phillies, Mets, Royals, Indians, Reds, and Rays in some capacity since 1974. Have had a couple big league guys, Jeff Schneider, who you signed, and then Jeremy Hellickson, who was Rookie of the Year. Have a few rings with the Indians and Mets. And then kind of how we met was with Todd Sears, who's a local guy, owns a facility, hitting guy, and played in the big leagues with the Twins and the Padres, and you were his hitting coach in high school and college. So that's what I got. We leave anything out, Joe?
Well, one little thing, I did, after Blackhawk College, I played at St. Ambrose College, which is now St. Ambrose University.
Yep.
And my senior year, the head coach resigned, took a job somewhere else, and they offered me the job. At the time, I'm after been in the service, you know, for several years. I'm 24 years old, I think, at the time. And so they offered me that job. I took it my senior year. They gratefully paid my college tuition, so it was a good trade-off. And then after that, at the end of that season, again, I was offered the position with the Phillies as a scout.
So Joe, you were a head coach your senior year?
Yes.
Player coach.
That's incredible. Did you
no,
act?
No, no, I didn't play. I didn't. The thing is, I knew at that point in my life, in my career, I knew I had run out of enough talent to play professionally, and getting that kind of an opportunity to get my senior year of college paid for, you know, and as well, you know, make an addition to my resume. It was just too much upside for me to not take it.
What position did you play when you were playing?
Catcher.
Okay, so you know everything about baseball then?
Of course.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I have an opinion about everything about
I'm not sure that everybody listening understands that usually, like, what the thought is in the baseball world is that catchers usually are the ones that make the best managers, make the best kind of, like, minds in baseball because they have the entire playing field in front of them. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but I'm sure if you look at the Major League Baseball, I would say probably the majority of were catchers.
Yeah,
at some point.
That is true. The catcher is involved in every play. I mean, if a guy hits a ground ball to the shortstop, well, that ball had just been thrown to the catcher, so the catcher is involved. Yeah, every play.
Do you think that being a catcher is that a reason why it's kind of like benefited your career, or do you think that this is kind of what your career would have been like no matter what position you played?
Well, it didn't hurt me. Let's put it that way. My heart was at second base, but with my body and my size and my type and my speed, guys like me were playing second base. But not me. I had the speed. My feet, hands, and throwing arm were plenty to play middle infield, but I did not have foot speed, so that wasn't going to happen.
And I'll tell you what, too. As a pitcher, I did thank you for your services in the military, but also thank you for your service as a catcher. Yes. Because pitcher, one position I will never, ever, ever, ever sniff is catcher, because I think you guys are crazy. But
well, it helps. It helps.
I'm sure you've got some stories of some pitchers you wanted to kill in your life. I've probably been there too on the list for some catchers. But yeah. That's a tough position, and not always getting a ton of credit, but it is you do have a good career, and so you're able to kind of prolong it into managing and coaching like you did.
Yes, exactly.
So Joe, I actually got a question. I don't think I've ever asked you this. What kind of made you decide to go into the scouting direction since you were a head coach? Like, what kind of made you decide you wanted to do that? Was it kind of like the fascination of like pro baseball and trying to get your foot in the door there? Or did you just feel like, hey, this is something I want to try out and let's just see how it goes?
Well, probably like all of you guys as baseball people, we would all kill to play professional baseball. And I don't know about literally, I haven't thought about that part, but we're going to do anything. And one of my sayings, and I'm also an author, guys. I've written a couple of books about my time in professional baseball and another one about my time in Vietnam. But I had a saying in that baseball book that I came up with on my own years ago. There are two kinds of baseball. There is the baseball that you want, and there is the baseball that you have. And you give it everything you have every day at every level, because it may every day, every pitch may be the last one that you ever realize. So I ran out of talent real quick as a player, and so yes, and I started coaching. The way the scouting thing came about, back in my American Legion playing days, I played one season for Moline American Legion post 246. I got to get that plug in there. And the gentleman that was the head coach, there were two teams, the A team and the B team. I was on that B team. But the A team head coach was a gentleman who has since passed away by the name of Dave Cox. And Dave had some big league time as a catcher, and he was well known in the community as a scout. And he was actually a baseball hero to anybody that was growing up at that time, because being a baseball scout was everything. Well, I hadn't really thought about pursuing being a scout. We were playing in a regional tournament in Topeka in 1973. And I talked about the pitcher, Jeff Schneider, that I was involved in signing with the Phillies. Jeff had been drafted in what used to be the winter draft. He was the second-round draft pick of the Texas Rangers. And there was a scout in the stands when Jeff pitched our opening game with the Phillies, a gentleman by the name of Steve Robb, R-A-A-B, Robb, older gentleman. And he approached me after the game to get information and this and that and the other. And, you know, talking about Jeff Schneider. And I was involved in that whole process with Jeff. And I met Mr. George Bradley, who was the area scout at the time. Boy, the flashes of Dave Cox being a scout, that just kind of lit me up for the first time. And I thought about talking to my wife about, boy, I want, you know, being a scout, that would be great. You know, I'm not going to be a player, da, 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 I'm laying all that out. Finally, she got tired of hearing me talk about it. And she said, call them and ask them. She says, I'm not going to listen to this anymore. She says, you have no chance if you don't ask. So I did that. I called Steve Robb and I said, you know, what are the chances? And he says, let me talk to Mr. Bradley. Well, the next day I get a call from Mr. Bradley. They were impressed with my organization. I was running that team. I was a player manager then. I was running the organization and catching. They liked the look of our organization. I seemed to have an idea of what I was doing, in their words, which I did. And they offered me the job. And I've been on somebody's roster in some capacity as a scout ever since then, since 1974 would have been the first year for me. So that's a kind of long-winded answer to how the scout thing come about, but that's what happened.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people listening may not know exactly how, like, the scouting process works. So I think one of those things is, like, when you go to sit down at a game, maybe you can kind of explain, like, the tools that you're looking at with a player, you know, kind of what the grading scale is, because it's a 20-80 grading scale, and I think a lot of people are confused by that. And so maybe you can kind of explain how all that goes, and like if you're sitting at a game, like, you know, when you're looking at a guy, like what are the things that you're looking at?
Sure. Well, I'll run you through the whole process. Fully understand, gentlemen, I am definitely an old school scout, and not taking anything away from this current generation. Scouting is a bit different than it was back in the day because the technology had not arrived yet. When I first started scouting, all the technology in the world was in your pocket. It was a stopwatch. And I'm not exaggerating. Everything else was you had to learn. You had to learn what to look at. And so what you did is not unlike what Matt Allison has done. Matt Allison is a hell of a scout these days. Matt would, when I'm with the yard with Matt, he watches me, and he told me this, he watches me work and the different angles I would go to look at a player and the things, and he'd ask me questions, what are you doing? What are you looking at that for? And I said, why are you asking me all those questions? He says, well, look around. All the rest of the scouts here, they're my age. What do we know? We haven't been around. So, and I did the same thing. I hung around, you know, the George Bradleys and the you know, Bill Clarks and some of the legendary scouting names. You know, Art Stewart, for example, was a mentor of mine. And they wouldn't necessarily tell you, you know, what they were doing, but you would watch. For example, there'd be 4, 5, 6 scouts standing behind home plate and telling stories and lying, as everybody would say, and teasing and going on like guys will do, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, big guy, 6'4", 215-pound, left-handed bat, steps into the batter's box, and there's total silence from the scouts. And some of them may have even walked over to the third base side to get a better look at the guy. So those type of things, that's the stuff that you learn. And today I don't see that quite as much as guys. There is a lot of emphasis on metrics and radar guns and, you know, exit velocities and all these things, which are important. Don't get me wrong. Those things are very important to know. But what I do, if I'm going to the ballpark today to look at a player, I'm going to be at the ballpark before any of the players are. I'm going to get there early, park down the road a little bit, and I'm going to watch, and I'm going to see how they get off the bus or how they get off the car or get out of the car, how they carry their equipment, what their equipment looks like. And I'm going to watch, and I'm going to wait for somebody to separate themselves somehow. And that can be anything. That can be not joking around with the guys. That's taking an extra lap around the outfield, throwing the ball up in the air and doing hand drills. I remember watching Ozzie Smith as a sophomore in college warming up, and he's juggling baseballs. You know, I mean, those kind of things. How do they separate themselves? What makes them different? So you watch the ball game and you see how they play. The first guy I ever drafted was a shortstop from Quincy Notre Dame High School in Illinois. It was a shortstop named Jeff Johnson. And I went and watched him play. He went 0-for-4 that day. When we went to sign him, he asked that question. He says, you only saw me play that one time. He said, I went 0-for-4. I thought, you know, my playing days were over. Why did you draft me? And I said, well, your 0-for-4 was a rocket you hit in the hole, and the guy made a tremendous play to throw you out. I said, you hit a sacrifice fly to right field to score a run. You hit a what looked like a possible double play ball up the middle to the second baseman, and you beat the throw to first base. I said, plus in infield practice, I watched how you fielded the ball. You didn't nonchalant it. You went after every ball.
Joe, do you remember Marcus Smith from Pembroke Hill?
No, I do not.
Left-handed hitter. He went in the third round to the A's, but that was like the big guy that, I mean, he's not like, you know, he's not like huge, but I'm saying the big named guy hitter in the area. But that year, and he went in the third round, I remember I was going with Matt my first day, and I got to the yard, and he was just like, I need you to tell me before warm-ups are over who we're here to see. And, you know, it was Rockhurst versus Pembroke, and I guessed wrong the first one, but it was because I was just trying to jump the gun in the first 5 minutes, and he was like, Zach, that's a bad guess. Just, like, watch. And I was like, okay. So Matt was my hitting coach in college, so we're really close.
Yeah.
We ended up going, and it was really easy to see after about 15 minutes who you were looking at, and he obviously popped off in the game and all that. But I just remember when I went with you another time to watch him, we were there for about 2 minutes. You're like, it's him. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, that's who we're here to watch. Just watch him move. And then I think he hit a bomb to right field and a double to left. And you got up and you're like, all right, I think we're good. Like, I think we know. And you're like, he's probably going to be a third to fifth round pick. And you just got up and he's like, you can keep staying if you want, but I've seen all I need to see.
That was that left-handed hitter. That was a left-handed hitter. I remember it.
Yep. He's actually comes to the facility now. He'll be in tomorrow to hit live. But anyways, like Matt did the same thing. We were watching him and it was a high school game, and he was like, you know, a lot of the guys left and it was just me and Matt left, and we left at the game, and he was like, look around. He's like, everybody else left. You know, Marcus has got probably 2 at-bats left. Maybe there's some freshman that's coming out of the pen and we're going to be the only ones here that are going to write him down. So we ended up doing that, and then the left fielder came in and he was like 88 and committed to KU, and he's like, look, this is why you stay the entire time.
Exactly.
And so I have a lot of appreciation for you and Matt, because I think the biggest thing I learned in that is, like, you got to be present and you got to be there and you got to be open to watch. And you know, Joe wasn't joking around. I brought a gun one time to watch a pitcher, and I was like gunning his warm-ups and his first few pitches. He goes, put the gun down, he throws hard enough. So he's like, just watch the game. And so that was a good thing for me, because I very much lean towards, like, that new school. Like, I want to know the metrics and see kind of how things are going and piece those things together in my brain. But it was a good experience for me going with somebody that's been, you know, around baseball for a long time and just saying, like, hey, here's this. When you're getting video, do these things, you know. And it was just a really good experience for me.
Right.
So. Joe, how was it for you? I know you talked about the metrics being important. And for someone who probably had to learn the metrics, like, on the fly with your job, how have you been able to, like, how has that learning process been? And is it something that you, like, look at now? Or is it something that, because I know a lot of scouts that, especially who have done it as long as you've done it, it's kind of like, the metrics now just support what you already knew to be true when you watched kids back in the day. And so now it's like, oh, okay, like, now you can see a kid who's got a fastball that maybe plays up a little bit, and then you can see the metrics and be like, oh, yeah, like, I already saw that. Like, I knew that. Like, is that been pretty easy, or has that been something that you've struggled with?
Well, the follow-up timing of your question is perfect, because I was going to dovetail onto what Zach was saying. And yes, you got it correct. The metrics, I did say that, the metrics are important, but they're not number one. Not for me. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that guy that separates himself. I want to see this guy, right-handed batter, junior in high school, senior in high school, goes up the line in 4.2. You know, he scores from a, you know, from first base on, you know, that kind of thing. He makes a play in the hole, throws that guy out. You know, runner on second, he hits the ball to the right side, get the runner over. Those kind of things. And let's back it up to the same kid I saw, you know, get off of the bus first and run to the dugout and got his gear ready. And he was, you know, the guy, this is separating himself. You show me that sort of stuff. Now I want to know what the metrics are saying. Now I want to know what his exit velocity is. Those things are important. You need to know that for one reason, because that's what everybody's using these days. But you don't, to me, you don't take the metrics and work backwards. You work forward to the metrics. If, you know, this kid here over here playing third base doesn't show me the throwing arm, or, you know, he doesn't hit like a third baseman, or, you know, whatever, I don't need to know the metrics on him. And now what we're seeing, with all due respect to PBR and Perfect Game, and there's a number of them out there, they're selling that information. You know, the kid comes in, dad writes the check, and here's his exit velocity, here's his, you know. But when I started scouting with the Phillies way back when, our scouting report was literally this. You guys are, I think you're all old enough to know what a postcard is. Okay. Our scouting reports literally were the size of a postcard, and they were 3-ply. You had to write hard. The most important box on that form was 3 letters. CHP, and it was yes or no. And the CHP meant, can he play? Or if he's a pitcher, can he pitch? You know, show me a 5'9", 5'10" left-handed pitcher that can just paint the black all day long, that can change up, that all of a sudden it's the seventh inning and his team is winning 2-1. He don't have maybe 4 or 5 strikeouts, but he got probably 15, 18 ground balls, a couple fly balls, maybe a double play ball here or there. That guy can pitch. That's a guy I need to come back and see. And the other, you know, this kid that, like I said, hits the ball on the right side, gets the runner over, you know, steals a base at the right time, turns a double play, makes a play in the hole. Can he play? Yes, he can. He's a 4-2 runner. That's above average. Okay, and so what's above average? That kind of dovetails right into you start talking about the grades. Everything is 20 and 80, okay? Ain't no 20s, and there might be an 80, okay? But there's only going to be one 80. You know, who is the best center fielder in baseball? That guy's an 80. This is me talking. But average major league is 50, okay? Now, how many 50s are there on the major league roster? And that's grading, you know, across the five tools. We know what the five tools are, right? Okay.
Go ahead, Sam, for the listeners, in case they don't know, as far as like a position player is.
Well, you've got run, throw, hit, power, and defense. Those grades. And you grade all five of them. And you're grading them on a major league scale, not on the high school scale, not on the college scale. So the kid shows you he's a 7 defender. And he's a 6 runner. Okay, so he runs 6 run, you know, maybe that's a, you know, 4-2, 4-1 runner, whatever the case is. But he's showing you these two grades that are professional level, okay? So you average out the others. Maybe the rest of them are 40s, you know, a 35 hit and a, you know, a 40 power, you know, something like that. But the average comes out to be 45 right now. He's a below average major league prospect right now. But now here's comes the part where the old guys like me, the old scouts, come in and start projecting. I see this kid. He reminds me of George Brett at the same age. He looks like Ozzie Smith. He looks like whoever, pick the name. And you start doing comparisons. You say, okay, he's a 45 right now. Now, if he adds that 15 pounds, whatever he needs to project to add, this kid could be a 55 or a 60, which means he's an everyday major league player. So our grading system back in my day, if you would be current grade and projected grade. So we're talking about now and future. So the future grade was important, but the now grade was important too. And it had to do with development. Now, many organizations do not develop like we did back, you know. I mean, how many... I don't even know what the roster limit is now on an organization. I know it's crazy what it is.
I don't feel like organizations are given enough time to develop anymore either.
No, they're not. They're not. And that they make the decision. Each organization makes that decision. I, you know, can't think of an example of, well, yes, I can. And we'll just talk about Ozzie Smith. You know, you look at that guy, you know, he's at 5'8" at the time. He was an average run, above average throw, hands, feet, instincts off the chart, but he only grades 35-40 right now. But I'm saying somebody along the line, and it wasn't Joe Murphy, projected him as being a 70 or an 80 everyday shortstop. You know, in my book, I talk about the, and I talked to Ozzie about this a few years ago, that I missed the boat on him. I saw him as a sophomore at the San Luis Obispo, University of California, San Luis Obispo. And so I'm playing in Wichita in that summer tournament. And I liked him. He showed me some things. You know, he really did. I really liked what I saw, but I could not project him. I did not know how to project him into the big leagues. Okay. So I turned him in as possibly an everyday second baseman, maybe some center field, but not a major league player, an organizational type of guy. That was my report on him. The scout from San Diego had been around a few days longer than me and took him in the fourth round, and the rest is history, right? But, and I told that story to Ozzie, and Ozzie, this is interesting, he wasn't offended by it. He kind of chuckled a little bit. He says, you know what? He says, you were probably right at that time. He says, because, now think about this, fellas. And Ozzie's not a scout. You're just a player, but pretty sharp. He said, you don't know what's inside of a guy. You don't know what a guy's going to do to get there. That yeah. said it all for me. I learned as much from that conversation with Ozzie about evaluating players as I did from any scout or being at any ballpark.
That's awesome.
Man, we need more people like you, Joe.
Well,
Joe, just a heads up, you would love Frank as a player. Frank is a, what are you right now, Frank? Like last year, 89, 91, somewhere in there. Big pitchability guy,
not a metric darling,
will not. Last year when he threw live, he'd look at his TrackMan reports and there'd be no baseballs in the middle column. And he's like, this is how I get outs and how I keep getting jobs. And if I'm in this middle column, it's bad news for me. So he's a big pitch to contact, grinder, all that stuff. So, but
they're just being nice because it's my birthday today. So.
22, right?
But I'm not, my prospect status is out the window, unfortunately. So,
but Joe, what's the, you talked kind of about a position player. So like you're going to watch a pitcher. Can you kind of talk about the grading scale for that and then kind of what you would do and seeing a high school guy? I think the hardest part for me, I was a lot younger. I think I was like 24, 25 when I was doing that. And it was hard for me because I hadn't seen as much baseball, and I comparatively haven't come to a lot of people. But you're looking at a high school kid that's like 17 and 18, and you're trying to project in the future, you know, like when they're 24, 25, whereas you go to, you know, KU and you're watching Frank throw there and he's 21, 22, it's a little bit easier because you can go, hey, 2 years down the road, this, he's throwing in the Big 12, he's getting guys out, you know, every weekend that are going to get drafted, our current prospects, going to be playing in, you know, double A in a year or two, as compared to a high school kid, like when we go watch Marcus, it's like, okay, he's playing Rockhurst, like, or some other school, it's like, there's nobody else here that we're watching. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he looks like Babe Ruth out there, but the reality is like, you're comparing him to, at the time, it's like Lorenzo Cain was a center fielder at Kansas City, so you've got to compare him to him, not his
company. Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, maybe you can talk about like pitching and kind of what you look at guys with that.
Absolutely. Do you guys know who Gene Oliver was?
I do not.
No.
Okay. Journeyman major league player from Moline, Illinois. His nephew and I played high school ball together. And Gene went to Allman High School and was all everything in football and basketball and baseball and quite a catcher. Played in the big leagues with the Cardinals and with with the Braves and ended up his career with the Chicago Cubs. And he even ended up coaching there. But he was with the Cubs in 68, 69 when they had the, you know, all the big run and all that sort of stuff. Well, after his playing days, and Gene, I'd see him at the ballpark, you know, come around, talk baseball, this, that, and the other. And the question that you're asking is one that any scout worth his salt struggles with every time they go to the ballpark. And it's got to do with pitching, because that is the toughest one to project for, you know, for a number of reasons. Well, like you said about Kane and, you know, that sort of stuff. So I'm talking to Ollie, you know, about this particular left-handed pitcher from our old high school, 5'7", 5'8", left-hander, couldn't break a pane of glass. And he's pitching. I've been scouting long enough to, you know, that my instincts, my radar was going off for some reason, and I couldn't pin it down with this. And this is a tough part with a pitcher. So I'm talking to Gene, and I said, what about Jeremy? And he says, oh, he says he's too small, he doesn't throw hard enough, et cetera, all the negatives. And I looked at him and I said, okay, but tell me about him. And he just, because I knew Gene, he just kind of smiled, and he says, when I'm evaluating pitchers, young pitchers, not like you said, not like the college guys that are 22, 23, that's a little easier. But young guys like this, he says, the first question you ask yourself, does he win? So this little guy that we're talking about here, like I said, couldn't break a pane of glass. Every year, his record is 9-1, 8-2. It's 2-1 in the seventh inning. They win or they lose. This kid could pitch. Tight little breaking ball, little movement on the fastball. And to this day, I couldn't tell you how hard he threw. The kid was around. He worked, you know, and he played football and he played basketball and all that. He was just a competitor and top academic kid. So the kid's punching all the tickets. He's separating himself in a number of ways, right? So his dad approached me and said, "You're a scout, you know, blah, blah, blah. If Jeremy's got some scholarship offers to, you know, some of these Division III schools and this and that. He wants to play at a higher level." See, that there again, that's enough. You can't teach that. He wants to play at another level. So I said, okay, he's a top academic kid, but I'm going to recommend that he go to a junior college where he's going to play. And he said, "Well, I don't know, you know, life, the academics." I said, "Well, you're asking my opinion. That's my opinion." So I recommended that he contact Indian Hills in Iowa, which is big program at the time, still is. So I knew the coaches down there and this, that, and the other. And coach came up, watched him throw, and he says, "What do you think?" And I told him, I said, "The kid just wins. He just wins every place he throws. He can pitch." So they gave him a little scholarship to come down there, and the academic part was a breeze for him. And to this day, he still holds pitching records at Indian Hills Community College. And what he did after 2 years of being the ace of the staff at 5'8" tall, he ends up getting a scholarship to Creighton. And he goes over to Creighton, and he pitches over at Creighton, and he holds some records over at Creighton. And still, up to this day, like I said, I can't tell you how hard he threw. Didn't matter. Kid could pitch. Could he play professional baseball? Everybody passed on him. Nobody needed a 5'8" guy, blah, 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 who couldn't break the pane of glass. So I helped him get a job in the independent leagues. So he pitched independent ball for 3 or 4 years, and he succeeded, okay? So that's another long-winded story, as you're coming to find out the way I am when I answer questions. But the thing that when you're looking at that high school kid, that young kid, even some junior college guys, what else does he do? Can he win? What's the makeup of him? You know, how does he handle himself? My second year with the Phillies, I drafted a pitcher out of Blackhawk College by the name of Jim Lassick from East Moline, Illinois. Jim had everything in the world, 6'3", 215 pounds. And this was before radar guns, but I'm guessing he was probably 94, 95 miles an hour. And cross-checker came in to see him. So in the third inning, bam, bam, the umpire blows a call, this and that and the other. Jim loses his cool, as he's been known to do in the past. Jumps up in the air, charges the umpire, throws his glove, gets ejected. And I'm sitting there thinking, "Oh God, I just blew it." Right? So, close the book, you know, start walking back toward the car. Checker says, I didn't say anything. Cross-checker says, "I don't know that I've ever seen a guy that wanted to win that bad in my life." And we drafted him. We took him in the first 22nd round. He pitched up to AA, had coffee at AA, and injured the shoulder or something like that. But there again, that things that you can't measure, those are the things that you look for, that competitiveness. The cross-checker saw that competitive tool. Guess who learned from that? I did. You know, you separate those things. But the first question is, you know, does he win? Not if he throws 95 miles an hour, 98 miles an hour, 105 miles an hour, do I want to go see him? Yes, I do. So I want to see what he's doing. I want to see how that body works. I want to see, is he overworking the muscles or his accelerator muscles doing blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. That's after you know, that tool gives you another look, okay? But also, the winning baseball games is not a tool, but it's also something that I can't teach. I can encourage and I can help, but I can't teach it. So I want to see both of them. If that makes any sense.
No, it does. Kids are just so much more talented now physically. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I think
I agree.
I think because they're so talented now, physically, they can all throw.
Right.
But that can they pitch stuff, it gets a little dicey with that. I certainly, like, I just know from my personal experience that, like, I had to learn how to pitch first because I was never very physically dominant in any level I got to until probably college. But it is one thing that's tough, and I think, like we talked about with organizations now, you have those things where I remember when I was getting scouted at KU, the question was always, okay, like, do you think you can learn how to throw harder, or do you can learn how to pitch easier? Like, what's easier to teach a guy? And the more and more I've kind of played and the older I've gotten, I think you can definitely teach a guy to throw harder, but it's very, very difficult to teach a guy how to pitch. And I think with hitting, it's different because me and Zach have this argument a lot. We have high school guys that come in for our live EPs and they're facing pro hitters and they just get dominated. And it's just like, you should be getting dominated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But like, yeah. I think that as a hitter, like, just the more pitches you see, I think the better hitter mm-hmm. you'll become. And I think there might be a cap to that, mm-hmm. obviously. But when you have these young kids coming in facing like plus arms, you know, those guys are going to become better from it. And I think pitching is the same way. I think all these kids that we have, like, they're so good and they come in here and they throw and they're throwing hard and great and stuff. But at the end of the day, like, when they leave our facility and they get out on the mound and stuff, like, nobody's out there anymore. Like, they got to learn how to get guys out. And I think that's the kind of that learning curve that we face as coaches now.
You're talking about, real quick here, that sparked a thought in me, that those high school guys are coming in and facing the pro pitchers, the professional velocities and that sort of stuff. What I'm looking for there at this time of year, I don't give a damn if they hit the ball at all. I want to see the kid chomping at the bit to get in the cage to face them. That's the guy I want.
I understand that 100%. I think that there is a lot to be said about somebody who wants to put themselves out there, especially like knowing that this game is so much failure based that yeah. if you can have a kid that no matter what happens in that at bat or that live AB or something, and he just wants to get back in there and do it again, you know, like that's something that I think will treat him well for his whole career, as long as he can hold on to that kind of mental skill.
Yeah, no, it's really good. We're lucky enough, and Bob's worked with, I don't know how many guys we've had draft out of here. There's got to be like, if we just
20, look at 20, 30, 40.
Yeah, it's a lot. We have a plaque out there.
I saw it when I was down there with Seamus.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. We got multiple big league guys in here, and I think when you're a kid, right, they always think getting drafted's the goal, and it's a good goal to have. And these guys are going to throw hard, and they've got tools, and that's why they're going to be in the pro day. So I guess you kind of talked about it, but what's your big advice for these guys if you had them in a room and just said, like, hey, when you throw out this thing, you know, this is what I think you should be worried about, or this is what I think you should be focused on?
And we're talking about pitchers?
Yeah, there's going to be hitters too. But
okay. For the pitchers, the last thing I would do is have a radar gun out this time of year. And what we would be working on doing, former student of mine, pitching student, number one draft pick out of Illinois, Cody Sedlock, another Allman High School guy. He pitched with me for 3 years. He came, started as a sophomore year in high school. And all we worked on was doing the same thing, the same way, every time. So the fastball, the curveball, the changeup, whatever it was he was throwing, looked exactly the same or as close to being exactly the same as possible. So that release point is all right here. Everything's right here, right here, right here. That front foot lands in the same spot every time. I'm doing the same thing with my body every time. And that's this time of year. Okay, got plenty of time to work on your velocity, go to the weight room, do whatever you got to do to get ready. But when you come here with me, we're working on throwing correctly and repeating, repeating, repeating. And when we're done repeating, we're going to repeat it again. That's how I handle pitchers, okay? I was a pitching coach in the past. I worked for my brother in American Legion ball and a little bit in high school ball. And we didn't, one of the things I never did, and I'm not really a fan of it because as a former catcher myself, I never flashed a sign to the catcher to tell them what pitch to throw. We encourage them to learn the game, to know the situation, know your pitcher's arm. If it's a curveball situation, I call a curveball, and his curveball has sucked all day long.
Now they've got wristbands. Every player on the field's got a wristband, and the coach just calls it, and it's terrible.
Oh, never, 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 never would I do that. I see that. It drives me up the wall. It does. It just drives me up the wall. And seeing a big league catcher look over to the dugout, I can just imagine Johnny Bench or Yogi Berra looking over to the dugout. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay, Skipper. Yeah. You know, no, huh? No. And the hitters, you know, pretty much the same thing. We work the mechanics again, repeating, doing the same thing the same way every time. If we're trying to square away a flaw, we might video it and show what they're doing and let them find it. And Zach, I think you and I went through this a couple times with guys, and we'd show them where it is we wanted that bat. We want that knob to go to the ball, you know, and we'd video them and show them what they were doing, that those hands were going out toward the first base dugout instead of back up the middle, that type of thing. And then let them find it. Let them work at it and let them find it. And then we'd finish up every session with my hitters. I'd finish up every session, cameras off, instructions off, get in the box, grip and rip. It's time to hit. Now, if you need to step back and think, about, that's another thing, okay? But now it's time to hit, and you let them hit. Finish up 15 or 20, whatever it's going to be.
That's awesome. Well, Joe, I think we'll have to have you on another time, because how much baseball you've seen.
We're just come on down.
But I've always really appreciated, you kind of guiding me and helping me along in my career, and I think we always talk about that with guys, like everybody's got people that help them out. And so you've always been that for me and taking me in.
I have to square that away. It's very kind of you to say that. But now the truth is, and I hope I don't embarrass you with this, one of the best things I ever did for you was get out of your way. You have a very good sense of what you're doing. You really do.
I appreciate it. And Frank's over here making fun of me.
I'm going to make sure that he remembers that every day.
Unfortunately, Joe, I have to train Frank.
Oh God,
it's unfortunate, but
I hate that part of it. Yeah,
I know. I have to actually deal with him.
Well, I want to add something else here too. That your facility. I did visit the facility down there when I was down with my son and his two sons. They work out there at and I love the facility. It's great. And like my one grandson, Jack, said, he says, it is so much bigger inside than it is outside, you know, and that's true. And just thank you for the work that you guys are doing. I'm not down there all the time, of course, but I get videos after their session. My son sends me videos and the progress that they're making. And I don't know how to pronounce the instructor's name, but he's doing a hell of a job.
Justin.
Yeah. So you guys are doing good work. That's good stuff.